Okay, today we're talking with legendary singer-songwriter John Wade, and of course, John, the reason we're talking to you today is because you have a new live album out that you've just released. It's called Live All Access. So do you want to talk a little bit about the new album? I know right now it's an iTunes exclusive. Is that correct? Did you guys record any video that you might release to go with this? And, you know, I think, you captured really a great live sound, you know, on this CD. And I think one thing you accomplished with this new CD is, you know, a lot of people, when they hear the name John Waite, they think of, you know, of course, the song Missing You and Tears and, you know, think of you kind of as a balladeer. But in listening to this live CD, you know, you didn't even feature, like, you know, your biggest hit, Missing You, and a lot of this is newer material, and you got just as many heavy songs as you do the softer stuff. So I think people will be pleasantly surprised here. You're, you know, John Waite's a guy that's capable of doing, you know,
well,
a little bit.
There's a lot of melodic rock right now that just might as well be short tunes, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know why I'm dropping all his last 5 years, but he took a dive. And, the Babies was kind of a hard rock band that did a couple of ballads.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, listening.
We live in an age of cliche.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And Dancing with the Stars and all the other fucking releases out there, and I just want to make the rock record, and that's the bottom line.
And the bottom line, that's what you did. I mean, I really want people to understand. You know, there's only 8 songs on this new live album, but yet, you know, they're really rocking songs, and it's almost, even though they're this is a live album, it's almost like a brand new John Waite album, because a lot of these probably haven't been as, you know, heard as much, because they're from some of your more recent albums, but they're all great songs, and there's not one throwaway track. They're just all really stand out on their own. I mean,
oh, yeah, the songs were on instinct. I just put together the songs that really represented the band. And the album has a running time that's just the same as any other album. It's just that live songs last longer.
Yeah.
You know, they tend to stretch out and play and jam, you know. And Jerry throws in like a really long extended guitar solo. It might look like music then.
Oh yeah, I mean, it's an album that won't disappoint. So, right now, you know, you released this album, and are you doing any shows to promote it, or are you putting?
Well, actually, on my way, we're just going to Michigan, and I'm just driving to the hotel. We play tomorrow.
Okay.
So we stay on the road a lot. We play a lot of gigs, and we're looking to get on a tour towards the end of the summer. That's more of like a continuous tour, but and we're going to go back to Europe, I think. So we've been playing hard. I mean, 2 years ago we had Rough and Tumble out, and we had a number one single on that, the classic rock, and we toured a lot of gigs over the last 2 years, a lot of gigs, you know. But that's why I put this record out. It was time for the Jordan to crash out there before we go back in the studio. But we do play such a lot that that's the main thing we do. I think that's why the live album was what I wanted to do for release. It's because it's how we live at the moment. We spend a lot of time on the road, and live albums are harder to make than studio records. There's no overdubs at all on this record, and there's no keyboards. You know, it's like those great 70s bands, you know, that you used to listen to when you were a kid. I mean, that really interests me.
Mm-hmm.
It's like walking on a tightrope, you know. It isn't something you can pretend to do. You have to do it for real. And it makes the whole show more exciting. And I think that reflects big time in the live album.
And I was curious, like, you know, when you do a show, do you ever throw in, like, any of the stuff you did with the babies, or do you pretty much concentrate on all your solo material?
Well, no, there's no bad English stuff, really. We do When I See You Smile, I Could Tell Her, in the encore. But we do a few baby songs, for sure, yeah. I mean, they're just great songs. I mean, they've lasted probably longer than I will, you know. I mean, they're just great songs. Obviously, it's a solo hit. It's what works, you know. The audience respond. They just go for it. So, you know, I like the idea of changing the set around a lot and trying new songs, you know, reworking the set quite frequently, you know.
And I was curious, you know, I was recently reading online that the babies have gone back with together with another singer. I was curious if they asked you to take part in that, or are you just too busy doing your own stuff?
Oh, no, when I left the band, I said I would never do, you know, put it back together again. It's like getting divorced, you know. You get divorced.
Uh-huh.
And 30 years later, you don't go, oh, I was wrong, I'll get married again. You know, there's a reason for getting divorced.
Yeah, I hear you.
You know, we've done everything we were going to do, and it ended in a... It just ended in kind of a bad way with the Jonathan Cairn thing, so I just, you know, I have no interest in it, really.
I got you. Well, you know, you've made a pretty great solo career for yourself, and I was curious, John, being that I'm a bit of a Kiss fan, one of your earlier hits was, of course, Tears, which is a cover of Peter Criss's, which anybody doesn't know is the original drummer from Kiss. I was curious, how did you originally get that song to cover?
I have no idea. It's Steve Vincent, actually.
Yeah, he was one of the writers, actually.
Yeah, I have no idea. I think the A&R guy at EMI said, this is a great song, you need to have a crack at this. And I'd written the whole record with the guitar player in like 2 weeks. And I was about to write Michigan. You know, that record just happened overnight.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
He was trying to help out with finding a couple of songs that might sound good, you know. And obviously we did an entire different arrangement on it, and I put a whole different ending on it and different melody. But, you know, it was a fun song to do.
Yeah, I mean, it fit your voice, it fit your style. I was kind of curious, do you happen to know if you had a bigger hit with it than the Peter Criss version? Oh, okay, well, that's just an interesting thing I was kind of curious about.
I actually never heard that version. I have no
You know, it kind of sounds similar, but of course, you know, you can check it out probably on YouTube, but I really think that you really rocked it up. You know, your version is a little more...
Well, we had a great guitar player. The sound sort of thing we have now is like a three-piece band with very, very strong keyboards. And it was all guitar shit, and it was all
And I was going to ask you, how did you hook up with Kerry? Because, you know, he's besides being a great guitar player, he's played with everyone from, you know, Alice Cooper and Slash to Rat. And he's also a great songwriter. So do you plan to, you know, write with him, you know, for your next album? So do you prefer playing the smaller like intimate places, you know, like a House of Blues or something like that, as opposed to the big arenas? Talking a little bit about the song Missing You, you know, that's of course the song that really put you on the map as far as your solo career, but you know, do you have mixed feelings about that song in the sense that, you know, a lot of times when you know, somebody hears a name like John Wayne on VH1 or something, you know, they call you like a one hit wonder, which if people really look, you know, you've got more than that.
Yeah. And when you have a song that big, it always cut off everything else to do. But, you know, I've heard the number one songs. I mean, When I See You Smile was number one.
Yeah, yeah.
The single off the last album was number one, Rough and Tumble. I mean, it's, you have number ones on this chart all over the world all the time. But, you know, I'm very lucky to have a song like Missing You that's that big. Free, Hello Right Now, I Have Missing You.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's the great thing about it. Like I said, it's even though that's a song from 1984, it's still relevant today. I mean, it does not sound dated. It's just a great.
Well, I try to write songs that I come from. You know, I'm not really a ballad singer. I'm not really. Yeah, I can't think of anybody else that does what I do. You know, I mean, I was raised on blues music and country music, and the two things together. Obviously, they rock them all.
Yeah.
I was listening really intently as a kid. I love cowboy music and I like story songs, you know. I've always taken it very, very seriously. It was never about fashion to me. It was like the nearest I've got to religion. mention in my life is music.
I mean, even Missing You to me is not a total. It's not like a total power ballad, and it's got a little bit of a pop element. It's, you know, got great hooks in it, and the reason I brought that up. The reason I brought that up is because my point I'm trying to make is, like, even with this new live album, that may have been your biggest hit, but you left it off, and yet you got the song If You Ever Get Lonely off your last album, Rough and Tumble.
Right.
And
right.
I understand that's a big hit, too, for you.
If You Ever Get Lonely could have been a hit. Yeah. You know, I just wrote to the chorus, and it's just good. It's just good. It's just good.
It's just
good. It's just good. It's just good. It's just good. It's just good. It's just good. It's just good. It's just
good. It's just good. It's just good. It's just good. Yeah, my point being is, you know, that's just as great of a song, and the fact that you can have a song that's just as big all these years later shows that you're more than a one-trick pony, you know?
Oh, there you go. Thanks, man. I appreciate you saying that.
Yeah.
So we'll release it If You Ever Get Lonely as a single to back up the release, and I'm coming with a studio version, too. So, it's a really great song. Also, Robin Fest, the country band down in Nashville, they released that number one single last year with, I think it had a song called Rebel Eyes, I think it was. But they were number one last year, and they just released If You Ever Get Lonely also. So I'm hoping that it hits for them in the country market, and hope it hits for us in the rock market.
I mean, that's great, too. You know, that's another point I was trying to make, but, you know, I was going to bring that up, but I'd read that... they covered that, and what's that like for you when other people are covering your material? And you know that, I mean, obviously you're getting, you know, money off of that, but it must be a great feeling that other people want to, you know.
Well, yeah, you know, I mean, it's a tremendous compliment, you know, when somebody covers one of your songs. I mean, I've had a lot of covers in my life, but the country market is kind of like that is about storytelling. It's really, it's on market, but, it's a huge compliment, you know. It's a great thing to see a young band do one of your songs because they think it's great. I mean, you know, they get my vote. I think it's, you know, I've already downloaded it. I voted for it, you know.
And, you know, obviously, you know, being a country band, it sounds a little different maybe than, your version. You must get a little, must give you a little kick, you know, like, oh, here's a country band, you know, it's a country version.
Well, you know, I did a duet with Guy from Crowds a couple of years ago, and I've always loved country, and I've always liked acoustic music. So I feel aligned with country, no matter what. I mean, country is huge at the moment, but it's huge in a pop way, but I like country like Larry Sparks, and I like Hank Williams, and I like Johnny Cash, and I like Merle Haggard. I love Alison Krauss. That's bluegrass, though. But I like all sorts of music. I like just great songwriting, you know. So that's why it's a cool thing to have a country band cover one of your songs. It shows that you're doing something right.
And you know, if it's done the right way, you know, you could have a huge crossover hit. I mean, it's not just them, but they could introduce, you know. Country fans can, oh, who's John Wade? Who's the guy that wrote this? I want to go check his stuff out. And
yeah,
you get a hold of
exactly.
Him, you know.
So, if we're going to release it to the rock market, and it's obviously going top 10 down in Nashville, I'll have a hit at both ends of the music spectrum, which would be kind of, if that would really amuse me. That would be just the best thing in the world, you know. I'd really love that.
Yeah, and you know, going back to the song, you know, missing you for a minute. I was interested to learn. You know, of course, I've heard Tina Turner's version of it, but I was interested to learn that when you originally released the song, you'd actually knocked off her song "What's Love Got to Do with It" off the charts. And interestingly enough, you know, later on in her career, she covered that song. What did you think of her covering that? Yeah,
I thought it was good. Being a producer, I wouldn't have produced it so big. And the same with Rod Stewart's version, I wouldn't have done it so big. I think Brooks and Dunn, when they did it, that was closer to the original. But I'm I'm like a minimalist, you know. I don't believe in double tracking, and I don't believe in big production. I think if you're tracking something up with big production, you're hiding something. And if you can play it on the acoustic guitar, and it's just as good, then you've really got something. And anybody can double track a 12 string. You've really got to have the song in the first place. And I like to hear my voice without a lot around it. I don't like delay, and I don't like echo. I like things that are really to the point, you know, like classic country, classic blues sounding things. That's music to me. The rest is just show business.
And see, to me, John, you know, while you're a guy that's still doing it, is besides, you know, having that great voice, you're a great songwriter. I mean, anybody's gonna make it in this business. You gotta, of course, have the songs, the talent, you know, the look. But you know, you're writing songs that have lasted, you know, all these years, and you're still writing new songs. I mean, does it ever get hard for you? Like, do you ever get writer's block or?
No, not at all. I try not to write because my mind is always full of ideas and phrases and titles. It's kind of painful in a lot of ways to get that deep into yourself. And I try to avoid it like the plague. Because, you know, life's tough enough. But when it gets too much, it can, you know, the drummer can kick a beat off and I just start singing something and that's the beginning of a record. You write something that's just like almost perfect in your own mind, and you want to get it out to people. You know, you want to share it with people. That's what music is. You know, people charge. There's tremendous uproar on the internet. You know, like people are downloading for free and stuff. But I think that's okay. Most musicians make a great deal of money playing live. It just seems ridiculous to charge people for music. So again, you know, it should be like that. It should be just like one big open thing, you know. And, you know, I just love making music.
You know, and as far as the digital age, I got to ask you, John, do you think you'll continue to release, like, full-length CDs? Or do you think, okay, because a lot of bands, you know, they're just...
I think I'm going to release albums really frequently now. Yeah. And just do that, do like an acoustic record, do another live record in 8 months. I promise myself I'm going to do that. And I'm going to do a studio record. It'll be out next year. But I have the opportunity to sign with a big label or keep putting out records on my own label. And I kind of like, I know what I like. That's the thing. I don't need to have... I don't want to ask anybody if it's okay to do something. When you're in the studio, you're kind of running towards the light. And I don't want to be asking some A&R guy what he thinks about where I'm going. A&R stands for always wrong.
Yeah, you know, I think a lot of ways the record industry really ruined it for themselves. I mean, I think, you know, what you're doing is great because it allows you to stay in control of your music, like you're saying. It allows you to not have some guy in a suit telling you, oh no, we need a single, you know.
Yeah, no, A&R guys were never allowed in the studio when I was working anyway. I just closed down. I couldn't even function. If some guy walks in and starts saying, I don't quite hear a single, you know, I'd say, well, go next door to the next studio. Maybe you'll hear one there, you know. I mean, it's just, I just don't get any of that. I'd rather play to 2,000 people that really get it and that love what I do and that understand what I do, even if it's being obscure, than play to 20,000 people and be in some arena rock band that's doing it for the money. I have a hell of a life. I really enjoy the hell out of everything I do. And I have a great band, and I love this new record. I'm as happy as I could be.
I mean, what more could you ask for? I mean, and even in listening to this new live album, I got to tell people, like, two songs that really stand out to me are, you know, Mr. Wonderful and Saturday Night, just for the fact that they're such heavy hard rock and songs. I mean, again, there's this perception that John Waite's a guy that does nothing but ballads, but anybody who listens to this live CD, there's a little bit of everything, you know, on here for people. And I last thing I want to ask...
I think it's one of my best things. indeed. Yeah. And it's the most unlikely because it's you know, it's live, it's punchy. I didn't load it up with hits. Mm-hmm. You know, there were some hits on it, but I was more concerned with the music. And I think if you get this record, you understand, you get a really big slice of who I am. You probably understand who I am.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
I'm not trying to be, you know, arena rock. I'm trying to get away as far as I can from that. You know, I look at that and I think, how the fuck dare you do that for music, you know? I'm on the other side. And, like I say, I'd rather go down fighting and play in 2,000 seats than playing 20,000.
Yeah, and you know, like, I got to ask you about the song In Dreams. That's a really a beautiful song. What, you want to talk a little bit about what that's about? Your inspiration?
Well, that's from the Tarantino movie, True Romance. They rang me up about 10 years ago and asked me to write a song for it.
Okay.
And Tony Scott was directing it, and it was a big deal, and they sent me a videotape of the scene. And me and a friend of mine, Mark Spiro, sat down and recorded the song in a night. In fact, what you hear on the original is the demo.
Wow.
Just making words up and singing it into the mic and catch it. And it's a beautiful song, live, because it's so naked, you know, it's just so honest. And, I mean, that's the kind of stuff, man. It's the lyrics, you know, it's like the lyrics are just, you've got to be writing stuff that's about life, love, and death, because that's what's going on, you know, and it's serious, man. I mean, I read a lot, and I love the spoken word and the written word, and that's important to me as any kind of melody, you know. I only sing really blues melodies, you know. I'm not singing like big operatic kind of like pop songs. I always sing the blues. And it just happens that I can write those kind of lyrics that go with it, that I'm speaking from my heart. You know, people, you know, somebody once told me, if you speak from the heart, people listen from the heart. And then that's what music is.
Yeah, I mean, the reason I ask about that song is, like, I listen to that song, and it sounds like it's something that was written from the heart. And, you know, you can really tell if somebody, you know, put their heart and soul into that song, you know?
Well, it's, thank you, yeah. I can always say that. That's why it's on my album.
And I just got to say, John, you continue to put out music. I'll continue to support whatever you do, especially, like, I'd love the thought of a unplugged John Wade album, like you said, you maybe have in the works. And I think it'd be cool if you just keep putting out this music on your own rather than have some big label, you know, do it.
Well, that's the point. I mean, it's so much fun doing it. It would be hard to stop. You know, I think I've found something that I can do. And I only have my catalogue now. And I want to keep putting out music that I just love. I always did. But I can do this without waiting for, like, a release date or, you know, being funded by some. I just pay for it and put it out. I make it. I pay for it. It's great. You know, what a great place to be.
Yeah, I mean, that's the cool thing about this. Like, you know, your publicist sent me the information about the live album, and I'm like, I didn't even know that John Waite was releasing, you know, a live album or anything. There's been no talk about it on the internet. It just came out. I thought, you know, how cool is that?
Yeah.
Yeah. And,
absolutely.
Yeah, you know, and the last thing, of course, I'd like to just ask you about is, you know, of course, you were talking about you were in Bad English in the early 90s. I was curious, did that end just because kind of it was a super group and you felt it was kind of like too processed, you know?
Yes.
Because, you know,
I did.
Yeah. Cause you,
I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
I just couldn't do it.
Because, you know, even as...
I just couldn't.
I mean, even as great as that song, When I See You Smile, is, and it still stands out today, I kind of thought, you know... it's kind of sad that a songwriter as great as John Waite, you know, is singing somebody else's song. People may be surprised to learn that Holly Knight's the one that wrote that song. Of course, she's a huge songwriter in her own right, but I think you're better off, you know, doing your own stuff.
You know, I mean, Bad English was a one-off, and we just threw ourselves into it.
Yeah.
And it was fun for about a year, and then it stopped being fun. And then... is what they wanted to go back and do what they did before. It's completely natural. Yeah. You know, it's completely natural to come together and make something like that and be successful. And then you go back, and I think my real songwriting career started after that. I started to get very, very, very serious about not compromising on anything. And I haven't compromised since.
And you know, it seems like, you know, it seems like this is kind of you know, you're coming back in a big way. I mean, you know, even the Rough and Tumble album did pretty good, and you got it now with you know, If You Ever Get Lonely. So I can't wait to see what you do next. So once again, John, I just want to thank you for taking time to do this out of your busy schedule. Okay, yeah, and do me a favor, keep my number, and anytime you want to do this again, we can do it again, because I'm a huge fan, as you can tell, and I'd love to help promote anything you got out.
Thanks so much, I really appreciate that.
Okay, take care, my friend. Thanks again. Bye-bye.